when disaster strikes. Will you be ready?
Good evening, and we begin tonight with the monster hurricane and its deadly impact already.
When all hope is gone, will the government be there for you? If you're looking for ways to take your prepping to the next level, then you've come to the right place. Broadcasting from a secure and well-prepared location, it's time for Prepping 2.0. And now, please welcome authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Hello, everyone. This is Shelby Gallagher. Welcome to Prepping 2.0. I am not in our normal secured and prepared location.
Although this is a very secure location, I must say.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Where I'm at today, I'm so excited to do this. I'm at Beaver Creek Armory with Glenn Tate and Hannah. Hannah is the person I've talked about quite a bit, who was my inspiration for the character Ash in book one. And we had a book signing here this afternoon at Beaver Creek Armory in Hillsboro, Oregon. Highly recommend checking out this great place. But more than anything, I wanted to interview Hannah. Hannah, welcome.
Thank you.
Very good. Now, you and I had a great conversation earlier, and I want to kind of talk about that. I took a firearm safety class from you years and years ago. And I remember, it's been like 5 or 6 years.
Wow. Okay.
It's good. And you were my inspiration for Ash because of your appearance. You are exactly how I describe in the book. You dress very dramatically and very noticeably. And I think, and you and I talked about this earlier, people don't know what a cool, awesome firearms instructor you are. So tell us a little bit about yourself first. I'm going to ask you a couple questions.
A little bit about myself. Hannah, I teach all kinds of gun classes now, which is really bizarre because I was used to be terrified of them.
Yeah.
It was something I was absolutely terrified of because I was uneducated and I was never around them. So I've been teaching here it's my 7th year this year.
Mm-hmm.
I started off doing all women's courses, and it just kind of evolved. I do women's, men's, I do self-defense courses. I've started a women's shooting group. I teach children because I'm a firm believer that education does decrease accidents.
Yeah.
I've got married, have 4 kids. I'm going to be a grandma here.
What the
Goodness.
Heck?
In May, yeah. Yeah.
Wow, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, good. So, I remember I approached you a few months ago to put together this book signing, and I said, hey, you may not know this, but you were kind of a character in my book, and you were a little shocked, I think. And so tell us, what's that like? Because I think a lot of people in both Glenn's life and my life find themselves in our books, and they're kind of surprised.
I was honored.
Good.
I was honored and humbled that I had an impact.
Good.
On someone in a positive way, and that is something that I try to do every single day, is just make a positive impact on people. So I was thrilled.
Good.
I was thrilled. I was just like, look at kids.
I'm in a book. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So I want to talk a little bit about you as a firearms instructor. Again, if you were to meet Hannah, and I realize no one who's listening to this can't, if you were to meet her, you would just think you dress the way you are, you wear the makeup you do, and you're so cool and all that, but they would never guess that you have the credentials that you have. So tell us what your credentials are.
I am a certified NRA instructor, pistol instructor, a certified NRA range safety officer and chief range safety officer, certified NRA reviews to be a victim instructor. Mm-hmm. I do the Oregon concealed permit and the Utah, certified Utah concealed
very
permit
good.
Instructor. Yeah.
So she knows her stuff. It's very cool. So before I ask any more, because I'm not going to do to Glenn what he did to me a few weeks ago.
Oh, geez.
And he's not going to live it down, and I'm going to keep reminding him that. Glenn, do you have any questions? Because this is kind of your first time meeting Hannah. Do you have any questions for her?
No, not really. A couple observations. We came in, and you teach the classes, the classroom portion, and the range portion, too, mm-hmm. here. And I noticed right off the bat that here on a Saturday, this conference room is full. I mean, you had a lot of students. And the really cool thing was they seemed to be all kinds of different women. I mean, in every, I don't know, category. I don't even know what you want to say. They was all different. And I love that because I don't know that there's a stereotypical woman who should know firearms. I think all women should know how to protect themselves, and firearms are the best way to do that. So it was just really cool to see because how you were described to me, both in person by Shelby and then in Shelby's books, this is exactly what I envisioned. And so that's cool. And while I have the floor for a moment, I need to thank you. And I put it in the book that I signed you. You had a huge impact on Shelby. and a very, very positive one at a very important time. And thank you for helping my Shelby.
Oh, thank you. You made me cry.
Let's pull ourselves back here. That's awesome. So what I appreciate, first of all, we're sitting in the classroom that I sat in. Stop it. Oh, we're over here getting all checked out. Sat in the classroom. I sat right over there. And what I appreciate, we were talking earlier. So you have, I want to talk about your firearms class, because you do teach men and women, primarily women. That's who your heart is for. Tell me, I'm just astounded about how many women you have come in here. And I think you're right. I think the kind of the group we saw today, young, old, tall, short.
Yeah, I'll talk about that a little later. That was actually my women's shooting group.
Oh, wow.
I have a women's shooting group called Babes on Target, where we come meet once a month. Mm-hmm. Because I realized that once the class was over, the desire was there, but they really didn't have any opportunity to come with other women, whether they were afraid to tell friends. I had a woman today say all her coworkers told her she was a terrible mom because she bought a gun to protect her children.
Wow.
And they really hounded her, told her terrible mom for buying a pit bull, which is the nicest dog ever. Mm-hmm. So it's just all these opinions out there. And so one of them was stood up and said, you know, look at all of us in the classroom. And like you observed, she was like, everybody's different. We're all different ages. We're all different styles. There's glam here, no makeup here, makeup here. And someone somewhere is going to relate to one of us and say, hey, if she can do it, I can do it. And maybe that woman who was on the fence about doing something will be like, you want to know what? Let's do this. Let's see what this is all about. Mm-hmm. So I was clarifying that. Yeah. So you were asking, sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, because you do your Babes on Target.
I do.
And if you just go into social media and look up Babes on Target, mm-hmm. and I'm saying that right, I hope.
Yeah.
You'll find you mm-hmm. and your classes. But you, it is, I think it's a bigger group than I even remember it being, because it's grown so much. Tell us about how just the big size of this group. And there's various groups too.
There is. So I'll just basically, if you just start off how I started.
Sure,
teaching.
That'd be great. Tell your story.
Sure, sounds good.
I was afraid of guns. Yeah. I was never raised around them at all. It's not that my parents were afraid of them. It's just that they weren't in our home. My dad is a Vietnam veteran. He was mm-hmm. a Marine, but he was drafted. And there's a difference between signing up and getting drafted. So when he got out of the war, it's just not something that interested him. And so I only remember ever being exposed to firearms at school. I'm dating myself. But boys brought rifles to school on their gun racks, and there was shooting courses.
Those were the days, right?
And no one shot anybody. No one did anything. You know, it's crazy now how things have gotten. But that's what I was exposed to, and I don't remember ever seeing, you know, a gun. As so, I was scared of them. And then, long story short, I don't want to drag this out, but I started working here because after my daughter was born, I needed a job, and working retail with four kids is impossible. And I'd never graduated college. I never did any of that stuff as a young mother. And so I thought, what am I going to do? Well, my in-laws had bought this place and they said, work for us. And I was like, well, that would be cool, but you know, I hate guns. And they were like, just come work in the back. You can do the web work. You can do, you know, all kinds of stuff. And I did that. And then what once seemed so scary, when you're around something so long and it's done in a good way that makes you feel safe, what once seemed like this big scary thing all of a sudden stopped seeming so scary anymore. And so I thought, you know, I'm going to try to do this. So I took a gun class, which actually wasn't really good, but I got the skills that I needed, and I started working at the counter. And it just kind of snowballed from there. And so finally, my father-in-law was like, well, why don't you go to school to be an instructor? And I was like, no way. It's just not something I ever envisioned, being in front of people. And I was like, that's not going to work. And he was like, come on, please, I'll pay for it. And I'm like, okay. So I went, I got trained, and then I passed, of course. And the very first question after congratulations was, when is your next class? And I was like, oh my gosh, I don't want to do this. And I don't think that it's that I didn't want to teach. It's that I didn't want to teach men at the time. 6-7 years ago, this industry was completely different. Yeah. And I'm not trying to you know, pigeonhole all male, because they weren't all like that. But it's a really hard industry to be into as a female when it's predominantly been a male's world. There were people that didn't want to listen to me. One guy told me, and I thought he was joking, and he wasn't. He's like, why aren't you at home with your kids? And I was like, taken back. So I didn't want to deal with it. And so I thought, wait a minute, why don't I do an all-women's course, geared to war women who want to learn. I wonder if that would happen, because I don't remember there being anything in the area at the time. There could have been, I just don't remember it. And so I formulated TN Targets. I kicked it off with a Groupon or Living Social, one of those, and it just kind of exploded from there. I don't want to get all teary, but it is probably, other than my family, it's been the biggest endeavor of my life. Seeing these women come in scared, crying, shaking, a lot of them have been victims of domestic violence where firearms were used as a threat. Women whose loved ones' lives have been taken with a firearm, whether it was self-inflicted or other, or just the plain general fear of firearms, because all the negativity and untruths out there in the media and everything else. And seeing them come in, I can see their legs shaking. I can see the right here. They're just ready to burst out in tears, anxiety riddled, and to go back there feeling safe and then come out crying, but for a different reason, because they now know once that they were scared of it is something that can protect them. And it's such an amazing, it's just so wonderful. I get women from all walks of life, young, old, different races, different backgrounds, you know, blue collar, white collar. There is no stereotypical woman that wants to shoot. They are women that want to protect themselves and or enjoy the sport of shooting. And it is just amazing to see the transformation. I had one woman come to me. She moved from Hawaii, and her husband forced her pretty much to be here. And I remember telling her, I said, listen, honey, if you don't want to be here, I don't want you here.
Right.
And I don't mean that in a bad sense, but you need to want it. You're not going to want to be here, and you're just going to have a miserable time. She's like, no, I think I'll do it. So she went through the course. She had a good time. 3 days later, she was buying her first gun from me. Then she bought several other guns from me, and it became a thing for her. And she started coming by herself to the range without her husband, which is really cool. And I hadn't seen her in so long. And she came about a year ago, and I was like, where have you been? And it's been a couple of years. And she said, you know, I just wanted to tell you how much everything has changed my life. And I was like, how's veterinary school? Because she came here to be a veterinarian. And she's like, oh, I ditched that. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry. And she's like, oh, no, no. And she literally opened her coat. Portland PD now.
Wow.
Portland PD now. And I was just like, oh, my goodness. So, you know, not everybody's going to be a police officer. But the transformation that I see in these women and their confidence, and every single time they come out, the one word they use is empowered.
Good.
I feel empowered. I feel empowered. So it's just so wonderful to see it. Since then, I was just tallying up just the women I've had. I've taught over 5,000 women in the last, since 2012.
Holy Toledo.
Here in the Portland metro area.
In the Portland
That's
metro
amazing.
Area. December 7th, 2012 was my first class. I now do co-ed again.
It was about a year after that that I came.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing. I love my ladies, and they all are... They're just so appreciative that knowledge is power.
It is.
Knowledge is power. When you don't know, that's one thing. When you know and you realize that the gun isn't scary, it's the person behind the gun, the mindset completely shifts. And once they realize that using a gun is relatively simple, as long as you're following proper firearm safety protocol, and that guns just cannot go off.
Right.
That someone's finger has to be on the trigger and someone has to be pointing it in an unsafe direction, their anxiety goes to basically nothing anymore.
Yes.
Because that fear of the... A lot of people think guns are just going to explode.
I know. It's crazy.
It's crazy. Yes. They really, really do.
Or ammunition. A box of ammunition will just explode.
I even have people that consider themselves experienced shooters out on the range when I'm being a range safety officer, and they'll hand me, they're like, this misfired, and I'm like, do you want to use it again? They're like, oh, no, and I'm like, okay, so I'll throw it down range, and why'd you do that? And I'm like, you're okay? It's not going to blow
up. That's funny. Well, good. Thank you so much. I love your spirit. I love your heart. And one of the things that I was excited to hear about that we were talking about earlier, I think this is amazing, and I want you to talk about this because I know this is... You're going to just do great things with this. You're going to take your message and you're going to start visiting domestic violence shelters.
Yes, yes.
Tell us about that.
That
I think
is
this
so
is amazing.
Cool.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
So, my group, Babes on Target, is a shooting group for women, and every lady in there is just amazing. They have the biggest hearts ever. aside before I talk about that, we adopted a homeless veteran for Christmas mm-hmm. and just gave that family all the love they needed. And without even knowing them, we knew yeah. one name from each person and an age, and they just put so much spirit and so much love into it. So today at our meeting, which you kind of came up on, we came up with the idea because we want to not only shoot at Beaver Creek Armory, but we want to go in the area, maybe go bowling, maybe do this wearing our Babes on Target t-shirts and just showing the community that we are responsible gun owners. You know, it's not a scary thing. We're not the stereotypical people. So we want to go to many of the Portland metro area's homeless shelters for women of domestic violence while bringing them supplies, because most of these women left with what they had on their back yeah. and that's it. They had to get out of the situation and that's it. And aside from bringing them some, you know, things that they need, saying, hey, you don't have to, but if you want to, you don't have to be afraid. I can show you how to protect yourself, and I'm going to offer my services free to them so they can take a class for free, because they obviously can't pay for it, and get them trained, even if it's not with a firearm, if they're not ready yet, giving them other, you know, places that they can go to, or training them otherwise so they can start feeling secure and confident with themselves and not like they're a walking target. Nice. Yeah.
Awesome. I love that. I love that. So before I ask my next question, Glenn, I want to give you a chance.
Yeah. What are some top myths that women come into the class thinking? And I don't mean that like, well, they don't know that that a Glock 45 isn't a 45
ACP. No,
I don't mean anything like that. What are some societal dumb myths that get sort of soaked in to women and men probably too, and they come in here and they... What are they worried about that they don't need to be worried about? What are some of those myths?
That the gun's just going to go off. They literally think the gun is just going to go off. And when they find that a Glock has a trigger safety, and it, which, as we know, isn't like a manual safety, they really get nervous. And I really have to drill in them, as long as your finger's off the trigger and you're pointing your gun in a safe direction, the gun's not going to fire. Another myth is having guns in the house with children is dangerous. And I have to really tell them, hey, if you're being a responsible gun owner and you're locking your firearms up, your kids are not going to have access to them, period.
You have a lawnmower that the kids don't know how to start, and it's not. There's not going to be carnage and mayhem and
well, my goodness,
all that.
Knives in the drawer, you know. But guns are locked up if you're a responsible gun owner. I'm trying to think of myths. I really just think it's being scared, not knowing, thinking the gun's just going to blow up. People act like they're holding a ticking time bomb, and once they finish it, they realize that they don't have to feel that way anymore. Other than that, I wouldn't really say myths, just people calling things like the clips instead of magazines. And when you try to explain it to them, especially the guys, I'm like, you want to see a stripper clip? I'll show you a stripper clip. Or a lot of people coming in calling AR-15s assault rifles, of course, is one of a huge one. And I'm trying to explain to them that's not what it is. Other than that, I just think the biggest myth is they just think the gun's going to blow up. Unless they haven't really expressed their concerns with me, I think because they're embarrassed, so they really don't say anything. You just see them sitting down, and I can tell by their body language that they're terrified. Legs are shaking, hands are trembling. People sometimes start crying back here when they hear gunfire. And I tell people when I'm in the classroom, you hear some people giggle. I said, it's not funny. It's not funny. Mm-hmm. They're scared. It's a scary thing, because if you've never been exposed to gunfire, you only know TV and movies, and it sounds completely different. And it isn't the sound coming out of their gun that's frightening them. It's hearing popping noises from all over, and they feel like they're under attack, right. And they have to really just compose themselves and leave the range and do that. So it's scary. I don't know.
And then I'm guessing after they shoot that they pretty much don't feel that way.
No, and in all the people I've taught, I mean, I'm talking thousands and thousands, I've had one person who just didn't want to do it. Every other person has pushed through it, even if they had to come out, decompress, and then go back in there. And the look on their face when they come out is they're so proud of themselves, mm-hmm. and they just want a big hug. And that's what I'm here for. And I think another reason being a female instructor is society says it's okay for me to do that, because if a male instructor was to hug a woman, it would feel, you know, very strange. That's but strange. I'm very, very nurturing, and they just kind of accept it. I remember there was a guy, and he started getting really teary. It frightened him, mm-hmm. and he pulled himself together. He didn't start crying at all, you know, full on, but it startled him. So I just came. I kind of gave him a half mom hug and a rub on the back, and afterwards he pulled me aside. He's like, "You made me feel so good and comfortable, because if that was a man, I would have socked him." But I but I just felt safe. Yeah. I felt safe.
Awesome. So a question I have for you, and I really felt when I was writing the book and I was describing Ash in the book, I was describing you, because you dress and you carry yourself very much like Ash does. You just, you know, you have the tattoos, you have the dark hair, you have the makeup, and it's awesome. And we were talking again earlier, stereotypes. You get some really tough stereotypes because of your look. People don't think that you are a firearms instructor. So tell us about that. Tell us a story or two. I think people need to hear this, because we all assume too much sometimes of stereotypes. And stereotypes are there for a reason, but then on the other hand, they're not truth either.
No, you are correct. Stereotypes mm-hmm. are there for a reason. There's a stereotype for a reason, because some people do fall into that category. Yes. So when people say stereotypes don't exist, I'm like, oh, come on. But then there's the other side of it. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, I remember last week I came out, there's a gentleman here waiting to take the handgun class, and he was looking at me, and he must have just thought I was some ding-dong behind the counter, because I was like, "Saw you here for the class." He signs up, and he kind of is like, "Wait a minute, you're teaching it?" And I was like, "Yeah." He's like, whoa. And he kind of looked fearful, like, oh, here we go, you know, yeah. There's some Looney Tune who's going to teach a course, and I just dropped $90 on something I'm not going to get anything out of. And I remember halfway through the class, we were taking a break, and he's like, "Little lady, you know what you're talking about." Yes. I was like, "Well, thank you." So that's nice. That's nice to hear. I don't know. Other than that, I think I'm just trying to think of instances. It's just shock when I tell people.
Yeah.
Just shock. They just kind of look at me, and they don't really, they're like, "Really?" And then it all of a sudden becomes from, "Here's Hannah," to, "Oh my gosh, you're awesome." I'm like, "Well, thank you."
Yes.
But you can be too.
Yeah.
Because I never consider myself better than anybody else. I'm just educated, and I'm just continuing with that education, and I like to spread it. So when people always hold me to this higher standard, it feels kind of comfortable. It feels strange, because I'm like, I'm just like you. I think the reason I relate with the women so well is I was once there. Mm-hmm. I was once scared. I know how it feels. I always tell people, I think my jobs is one of the hardest jobs, because I need to install strict gun safety with no waiver, without instilling fear in others. And that is a hard balance to do, especially when someone comes in here and they're already scared. The very first thing I tackle before we even get into the firearm itself is gun safety. And I'm going over really heavy situations, and sometimes it scares people, and you try to make a balance of it, which is why people always call me eccentric or quirky. And I'm like that for a reason, you know, because you have to add, not levity really when you're talking about safety, but you have to do it in a way where people aren't sitting there with saucer pan eyes going, "Oh, I don't want to touch the gun now," like, because mm-hmm. it's hard. It's hard, and it's just trying to find that balance with people.
Awesome. So that's a great segue. So I want people to hear all about this. I love your class.
Thank you.
How, if people want to get into, and you have a couple of different versions of class, and I know you do a bunch, probably every, I would guess, almost every day of the week. Tell us how, if somebody wants to take one, or how could they get in touch with you, and kind of what's the format and the schedules sort of stuff.
So yeah. BeaverCreekArmory.com is always a good way. It has the menu drop down with all the classes and the dates and times. TN Targets is on Facebook. I respond there. If women are kind of wondering and not sure, I've got, you know, a bunch of 5-star reviews. I've got pictures. I take pictures of the classes mm-hmm. of the women holding their targets, and then I can interact with them there. My tea and target classes are the women's classes. I do serve tea and refreshments, by the way. I do them on Sunday mornings or Saturday or Friday nights, excuse me. Mm-hmm. And the reason I do them at those times is we open very, very late on Sunday and we close at 7 on Friday. So by the time my ladies get to go to the range, we're closed and there's no one there. It's just us ladies. So no one's going to be shooting large caliber next to them. They don't have to feel like they're being watched or judged, which mm-hmm. they wouldn't be, but you feel that
way, right?
When you're new to something. So that's when I have those. I do handgun 101. It's my co-ed classes. Those are done on Saturdays usually. I do train children.
I was going to say, I thought was so unique is you have classes for kids.
There's
an eight. That's awesome.
I am a firm believer, again, that firearm education decreases accidents. When you take curiosity out of the element of the equation, they're less likely to want to touch it because they've already done it. It isn't 100% foolproof, but it's a really good way to take curiosity out of where they're not seeking it out because they've done it before. So I do a class that's called Whippersnappers. I used to start at age 7. I kind of bumped it up to 9. I found some 7-year-olds were just not ready yet, and mm-hmm. I would see the parents trying to push them, and I was like, you cannot push your if they don't want to be here, if they're not ready yet. You can't do that. Mm-hmm. The Whippersnappers is from 10 to 12. And basically, we focus on safety, when you can and can't touch, you know, fantasy from reality, video games, movies, all that kind of stuff. They do get to shoot a bolt-action single 22 rifle. They get 50 rounds. But I do not hold it in a classroom setting anymore. I found that that is kind of intimidating for children. So I have them come with me the family, personal, one-on-one time. Instead of standing up, build a rapport with them, and then just try to work from there. Let them ask questions. I don't have a path to go down. I give them all the info, but I kind of feel out each child and let them ask questions or do this and that. So
that's awesome.
That's what we do there. Then I have a teen class, which is really fun. Ages 13 to 17. It's just basic handgun class. Teach them how to semi-automatic, single action revolver, double action revolver, how they function, how to take care of malfunctions and stuff like that. So that's a really good course. I also do that privately one-on-one with the parents and the family so they can just, you know, it's a real low-key setting to where everybody feels safe and relaxed.
I just think it's awesome for kids, yeah. Especially kids and youth. I think that's so awesome because you don't find those classes very many places.
And I get asked all the time, that is my main question, aren't you terrified teaching children? And I always tell people, no, it's the adults I'm terrified of. Mm-hmm. The children listen. I've never had a child not listen and absorb. Their finger discipline off that trigger is pristine. I never have to remind them hardly because they listen. They know because they want to please. They mm-hmm. want to be good and do things. And it's a joy to do it. It's the adults with the bad habit.
It's the adults. We have the bad habit. Yes, we do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, we only have like a minute or two. So, Glenn, I'm going to let you go out with the last question.
Have you ever been, and we have not rehearsed this, so this could be interesting. Have you ever gone to a gun store or even been at your own gun store and a man, you know, is like, oh, you don't want a cool gun. You know, you want a Rossi 38 special, little lady. Because I've seen this happen with Shelby, and it's hilarious. We'll walk in, and she knows a lot about guns, and some guy will be doing the whole little lady thing on her, and I'm sitting there laughing, and I'm just waiting for the sparks to fly because I'm going to have another good story to tell. So does that happen to you?
Yes. I went into
a big box store.
We're not gonna get sued here. Big retail chain store, and I sat at a gun counter. There were 5 gentlemen working there. Not one of them came and approached me because they were, I don't know what they thought. They saw me there.
This is many gun stores.
This happens a lot.
Business model. They think that a great way to sell retail is to ignore customers. They think that this is actually a winning business model. I've never understood it.
Mm-mm. So I sat there for about 20 minutes. You think, why would you stand there that long? My husband was wandering in the store and I just was standing there looking at the guns. And finally, he comes up and he's like, you're ready to go. And I'm like, rack, rack, you know, like no one's helping me. Well, one of them heard me complain. He's like, do you need help? I'm like, no, I've just been sucking up your oxygen for the last 20 minutes here. You know? Being snarky, I was upset. And he's like, well, what do you want to see? And I was like, I'd like to see that gun down there. And I pointed to a SIG and he's like, the 45? And I was like, yes. He's like, 45 caliber. I was like, yes. He's like, oh, sweetie. And my husband walks away going, ooh. And I'm, yeah.
Ooh,
so and I'm like, wait, where
something.
Are you going? And I was like, instead of getting mad, I decided to play along.
Yeah.
And I was like, what's wrong? He's like, oh, 45 will knock the feminine figure over. And I looked and I'm like, I'm a sturdy girl. It's not going to knock me over. And I was like, well, what would you suggest? And he's like, come over here. Then
don't
he
say 380.
He handed me a pink 380.
I knew it.
And I said, well, why a 380? And it was an LCP too, which is tiny. It's like, and he's like, well, the kick isn't bad, which the kick on that gun is awful because it is
so
probably
tiny.
The worst one ever to shoot. And he's like, for the tiny feminine hand, and I've got Sasquatch hands, okay? And so then I'm like, okay, what's another good gun? And then he pulls out a pink revolver. And I said, well, how come this one? And he says, because it's easy to use and you don't have to think much. And I said, do I look stupid? And he said, that's not what I was implying. And another customer said, sir, that is exactly what you just told this woman.
Wow.
He's like, I'm leaving. You should leave too. And he turned around and I just left. Yeah.
NRA, senior range officer credentials and all that stuff. And yeah, I see this. And by the way, this isn't an indictment on men. I think
A
lot of gun stores have become much, much better. I was just talking to somebody about this today. And it seems like 5-6 years ago, whatever, I would see this a lot. And I asked Shelby, I said, hey, do we just go to cool gun stores and that's why we don't see this stuff? Because I've not been seeing it nearly as much, which is good. Again, why would you push away, you know, 50% of the population? And the thing is, if you weren't who you are, if you were a typical woman looking at a gun, maybe for the first time, you have an experience like that, you're never going back.
Yeah.
You're never going to get a gun, and that could get you killed.
Absolutely.
And that's such a terrible thing. Just for some small subset of guys to just feel like they're big shots or something.
I do have one thing I need to add real quick.
Yes,
and I
please
know
do.
Lining up. I urge all of you men listening out there who have wives, sisters, you know, girlfriends, whoever, a woman in your life, don't pick out a gun for them.
No,
please,
I say that,
let them go and pick out their own gun. I know you're trying to be helpful. I know your heart is in it, but let them decide. My suggestion is buy them a course. Buy them a class. Once they've taken the course, given an open-ended or however much you want to spend on a gun certificate to buy what they want, have them go to a gun range where they can rent. We have ladies' night, $5. $5 lane fee Friday nights from 4 to 7. $5 gun rental and a free target. Try the different calibers. Once you've nailed what caliber you want, now do I want a full-size, compact, subcompact? What safety features do I want, or does it not matter? And last but not least, what can I afford?
Yeah.
That is something I do, is help people pick out their first gun. Another thing big box stores do is they try to tell you what you should have according to their opinion, and you really should go in knowing what you want. So I will always, you know, listen, what are you looking for, and try to get it to you that way. But I highly urge it. The amount of women that I get in my courses where I do understand that the men in their life were trying to be helpful, but the gun just isn't for them.
Yeah.
They don't like it. It doesn't fit their hand good. It doesn't work usually. So that's what I strongly urge. I do understand that's awesome that you're trying to do that, but let them decide. Let them
decide
for themselves.
Thank you. I have said that before. I've said that on this podcast, and I say that in my book. Guns, firearms are like jeans. They fit people differently, and you need to try them on. The best place to do it is to rent them, and I think it's the best way to do it inexpensively. And you do that here at Beaver Creek Armory, which is great. And so
a lot of times what will happen is they'll get the gun, and it makes them not want to come back and shoot it because they don't like it.
Because it hurts or it's uncomfortable.
And so
does
they don't
fit
return,
them?
And that's
disappointing. The tragedy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, I hate to say this. We have to wrap this up. We will come back.
Thank you.
Yes, and I want to see you again. And again, I just want to leave people on this note. Please come visit Hannah at Beaver Creek Armory. You've heard how awesome her classes are. You can check out their classes online at beavercreekarmory.com.
Thank you.
We'll be right back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate right after this.
PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Looking to meet other like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own prepper group? Already have a group? Join PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet has gathered the biggest names in the industry to help unite preppers everywhere. Join John Jacob Schmidt, Scott Hunt, Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, Glenn Tate, Shelby Gallagher, Charlie Hogwood, Samuel Culper, Survivor Jane, Rick Austin, Franklin Horton, Ryan Mitchell, and Brian Duff. Our team is united. Check us out at PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. PrepperNet.com.
Prepper Press is a small, independent publisher of survival nonfiction and post-apocalyptic fiction. At PrepperPress.com, you'll find a variety of books to guide you on your journey to prepare for a compromise to the electrical grid, natural disasters, economic collapse, political strife, or similar scenarios that could disrupt life as we know it. You'll also discover fictional yet believable stories about what happens to society when everything falls apart. To learn more, visit Prepper Press online at PrepperPress.com.
And we're back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Well, and welcome back. You know, we had a special treat here. We're at Beaver Creek Armory in Oregon, Portland area, and one of our Patreons came. And you know how we knew he was a Patreon? First of all, cool.
He walked in with an I Miss America t-shirt.
I Miss America t-shirt. It makes a statement. And so, Barry,
yes.
Welcome. Thank you for joining us. And what we did was, we're here, we recorded a podcast session with Hannah/Ash from the books. I was like, hey, Barry, you want to be on the show? And you're like, I don't know. And I was like, no, seriously, it'll be fun.
What I said was, let me ask my wife.
Respect, mad respect for that. No, I get that. And so you said you would, and we just want to have you on because, I mean, just find out some stuff. So, Shelby, do you have any questions for Barry?
Well, yes, because you're a fan, and I recognized that this shirt as soon as you walked in. Yeah, exactly. So you tell us your experience with our books. You've read our books. Mm-hmm. Tell us, and you've been very kind in your words. You've said we've inspired you. So tell us about that. Let our readers hear about that.
So a very good family friend actually gave me every single one of Glenn's books. And said, you need to read these.
Mm-hmm. He's a good friend. You got to keep that guy around.
He's a very good family friend. He takes care of us. And so I did. And it changed my world in terms of, I'm from Central Oregon, so I grew up hunting and fishing. And you know, I have the background of, okay, got to have a little stuff prepared for. But it really opened my eyes to my normalcy bias from living in the Portland metro area and what I need to do and what do I need to watch for and what do I need to open my eyes to in terms of preparing. And what it did is, I was telling you that it brought the romantic side of the books in terms of the adventure.
Right, not the lovey kissy stuff,
not
but
the lovey kissy,
the adventure.
The adventure of being a prepper and you're taking care of your family and, you know, guns are always sexy and all that stuff to the practical. What did Grant do in his cabin and what did he store? And I was telling you a story how I go to Cash and Carry, which is down the street, and every time I go to Cash and Carry, I think of you because I think of him grabbing, you know, pancake mix and things like that. And it really... the books have changed my life and my wife's life, and my family's life, in terms of, you know, I think every day about what can I do today
to prep.
What did I do today to prep?
Exactly.
Right? Or to make our lives that much better for the future. And which in terms of helps my in-laws, and I've helped others all because of the inspiration of the books that you wrote. And it's funny, I knew Hannah for years and years and years as Ash, and first time I came into the gun store, she helped me, and I said, I like you, and I'm going to send my wife here to take your classes. And so my wife took her class, and my mother-in-law took her class, my sister-in-law took her class, and then I sent my mom to take her class. So she's been a real inspiration in my lives, as well as Shelby's.
Yes. Good.
Well, now you've read book one of Shelby's.
I've read book one, and I said I read about a quarter of book two, and she made me show her the exact page that I was on, and it wasn't quite a quarter.
No, it's not quite a quarter, and that's okay. You're just getting started,
but
though.
But I'm just getting started, but I did read all of book one.
Good.
Yes, and they're fantastic, especially the female, Julie, her perspective. In fact, the friend that gave me all of Glenn's books, I gave Shelby's first book to his wife as a gift.
Excellent.
I pre-ordered off of Amazon before it came, and as soon as it came in, I got it up to her in Idaho, and that was a gift back to her, was your book. I hadn't even read it.
Nice.
But I knew it was going to be awesome.
Good.
And so that was a thank you up.
Oh, very cool. Very, very cool. Yay.
That's one of the reasons Shelby's books are so important, in my opinion, is the reaching out to females who are maybe on the fence about it. And I don't know if that's a situation that you're talking about. It sounds like, you know, if it's a family that's like giving out 10 Glenn Tate books, they're probably squared
exactly.
away. But that's really, really heartening to hear. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Shelby, do you have a question for him?
I don't, but I know you guys had a great conversation during the book
signing. We did. We talked for like 2.5 hours on and off.
Awesome.
It was pretty
was
awesome.
Was it that long?
It was pretty awesome. Jeez. I had to sit down after a while.
I'm sorry about that.
Well, what is it like living in Portland, very, very liberal place? Because Shelby talks about this in her books, and I think some people who haven't been out here and haven't been on the West Coast, I mean, if you live in Alabama right now and you're listening to us, mm-hmm. you're probably like, what's all this crazy stuff about Portland being crazy? How crazy is Portland, and are we exaggerating?
Crazy, it's as crazy as you read in Shelby's books. I mean, it's there, mm-hmm. and it's scary. My wife works in Portland, and, you know, I probably wouldn't want her working there if she couldn't take care of herself. And it's a scary, I know the media hypes everything up because obviously they got to sell ads.
Yes, they do.
And they try to tell you what to think. But the police situation, the Antifa, the protests, the riots, I mean...
The criminalized homeless.
Scary. Mm-hmm. It is. It's honestly, I mean, I'm a trained armed man, and I get the heebie-jeebies, and I'm on constant alert when I'm downtown, which is hardly ever because it's not safe, and it is just getting worse.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow.
Well, without going into any details, do you have bug out plans, and how seriously do you take that? It's kind of a leading question. If I were in court, I would object to my own question.
Good thing we're not.
but do you have bug out plans, and do you think others should? Should people maybe pick up and move out of big cities? I mean, what are some thoughts, and why are you still in Portland, basically? I don't mean that critically.
Yeah,
I mean that.
Correct. You know, I think if your plan A to bug out is to bug out, you're in the wrong location. I think you need to be living at your plan A bug out location right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish I was. You know, I don't have any excuses for that. At least that I don't want to talk about.
Right.
But I do have quite a few bug out locations. I would say 3 very, very solid bug out locations that already have supplies, and
these aren't necessarily like mansions that you own. These are like people you could stay with, that kind of thing.
Yeah, there is ownership as well as there are tribes. You know, mm-hmm. build a tribe, and these are people I can count on that I know that I will be taken care of as well as my family is taken care of, and they know that if they ever had to come here, that we would take care of them.
Yeah.
And vice versa, but there's more than just one family and one family. There's tribes,
communities
in different locations mm-hmm. that we can take care of each other, because if there is a collapse at Teotihuacan, you're not going to be able to survive by yourself. It doesn't matter how many guns you have. It doesn't matter how much food you have stored in your basement. If you don't have a tribe or help and a team, it's going to go downhill fast.
So tell me about Live or Die. What does that mean to you?
So this is what I heard on the podcast, is the game that Shelby and Glenn
yes.
play, where they're driving or they're in a grocery store and they do a completely superficial judgment based on their appearance or what they're driving or bumper stickers on. If something happened, a collapse or tragic event, would this person live or die? And as soon as you guys said that, I just started cracking up, especially in Portland, because that is just like
there's
so much potential here. So I drove here, and the whole entire time I was just cracking up, playing Live or Die. Is that later year in a Prius with the Kate Brown sticker on it? I don't know if I can.
That's the communist governor.
That's
of Oregon.
The governor of Oregon. No, I've I'm on her radar, I'm sure.
You know, is she going to live or die? And
the person, not the governor. We are not threatening the life of the governor. Thank you very much.
No, the person
Oregon
in the car.
State Police.
And we don't wish ill will. Honestly, let me just say this: when we play, we don't wish ill will on anyone. But it's the idea: is this person? Do they look like they have the wherewithal to survive a collapse?
Do they have the skill set, tools based on a superficial
appearance,
which is funny.
It is funny. It's a fun game.
It is funny.
Yeah.
So.
We've talked about the Trump slump and how a lot of people, including me, maybe Shelby, I don't want to put words in her mouth, kind of took a little break. Hillary Clinton was not elected. We were ramping up for Hillary Clinton getting elected and all the awfulness that would ensue. And then when that didn't happen, we all took a bit of a breather.
Yep.
Yeah, what about you? I mean, not only the Trump slump, but tell us about sort of ebbs and flows, ups and downs in your motivation as you've been a prepper, because I think that's really common, and a lot of people out there want to hear somebody say, yeah, you know, or they want to hear somebody and they can say, that's me too.
That's definitely me. I was in the firearms industry, and I saw many ebbs and flows depending on who our politicians were and leaders and what they said from day to day, but I was gearing up just like everybody else I knew. And
what time frame was that roughly?
I would say so I went down to the SHOT Show and I talked to some heavy hitters down there about what they thought was going to happen in the election, and every single one of them said Hillary Clinton was going to win. And at that point I was like, if these guys think that Hillary Clinton is going to win, Hillary Clinton's going to win.
So that was like what, 2000, fall of 16?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, well, it was at the beginning of the year, so because SHOT Show.
January
2016. Okay, that's right.
So that geared me up. So for that whole entire 9, 10, 11 months, I was buying as much ammo. I probably bought 20 guns and
securing, making sure that everyone knows.
My wife better not be listening to this, but yeah.
Making sure all the locations are set and ready.
Making sure, you know, communications was a big deal. Communications.
Good on you.
Ham.
Good.
You know, I bought the handbook for beginners and bought a ham radio off Amazon, and talked to my friends who all have their license, and you know, just setting up everything with the tribe in different areas, just in case, because you never know, and you know, your imagination could go anywhere with Hillary. But the Trump slump, like you said, he won. I was actually on the set of a TV show that was filmed in Portland. It's no longer anymore, but I was the only Trump supporter there, I thought. And there was about 30 Hollywood liberals, and they were checking their phones the whole entire night, and they were freaking out. I mean, these are all Hollywood types, and they were all very liberal, and they were freaking out.
It was fun to watch, wasn't it?
Oh, it was fun to watch, but I was scared because we were filming out in the woods, and the news came that night. It was late at night, 11:30, and women started crying.
Wow.
Men were swearing, punching trees, everything like that. And I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm out in the middle of these, and they don't let you have a gun out there. And I'm just like, okay, where are my exits? And somebody said, well, I better get a gun because these Trump lovers are going to come find us and kill us. And I was like,
oh my goodness.
And he says,
called projecting, liberals. Yeah. That's what liberals do. They project. They want to do that to us.
Exactly.
They think we're going to do it to them.
Yes.
There's a great meme that says there's approximately a trillion rounds of ammunition in circulation in the United States. If we were as violent as you people think we are, you would have heard some loud noises by now.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So one guy says, where can I get a gun? And then one guy points to me and says, well, Barry's the gun guy, and then all the Hollywood liberals turn. It's a little scary there, but the director came up to me afterwards, and he patted me on the shoulder, and he says, hey, you're not the only one that voted for Trump, so.
Nice.
That was a good feeling.
You got to stay under wraps. So, question for you, because you were here in 2016 when Trump was elected, and that, if you've heard me on podcasts before, you've heard that was around that time when I started writing the books, because I'm watching the Portland liberals losing their mind as the elections are coming through, and the week that came after that, you'll remember the following Friday, I know what I saw in the news and I know what I experienced sitting in traffic. What was your perspective that the Friday after the elections here in Portland, there was the riots. So tell, what do you remember from that time, Barry?
I remember telling my wife that I did not want her going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Just straight up.
Because she's going to have to pass through that.
She's got to pass through it. I don't care. I don't care if you're armed and have a cattle guard. I mean, that would be nice, but.
Right.
It was scary.
It was dangerous.
It was a real thing. And the police were not involved as they should have been. Mm-mm.
They did not quell it. They allowed it to continue.
And a lot of businesses were damaged and ruined, and vehicles and cars and
assaults.
They were blocking ambulances.
Yes.
And I mean, it was like out of a book. It was like out of the book.
Isn't that crazy?
It's crazy.
And I appreciate that because, yes, I wrote a book of fiction, but it is inspired by true events. And true events that really happen. And when they happen in your own neighborhood, in your own city, and those sorts of things, I need to go to the grocery store. I need to go pick up someone from the airport. I need to, and you have to somehow figure out a way to navigate through that. It becomes very real. Mm. And that's where I was. I was like, if I have to bug out, I can't, because my bug out location, as you know, from previous interviews I've done, was sold right before that. And I'm like, I can't get out of here. And if this gets any worse, mm-hmm. I'm going to go camp in the woods. I don't know. I'm not going to stay here because it's getting that dangerous. So I appreciate that, because I sometimes think, like Glenn was saying earlier, people in Alabama do not get kind of this undertone of kind of resisting the president sentiment that's just always here now and has been since 16.
Every day, all day long. And it's scary, especially how Portland is laid out. If you're going to live around here and you have bug out locations, you have to have multiple plans, because how are you going to get through Portland?
Speak to that, because I've talked about there's very few freeway egresses and exits here, so you're going to have to figure out. Yeah, just talk to that.
Well, I think this is for folks out there who don't live in Portland, which would be most of you. This is something also to pay attention to.
In your own city,
a lot of American cities and metro areas are built on, you know, the crisscross of a couple rivers, because that's where, you know, commerce was, and like Indians mm-hmm. traded with pioneers mm-hmm. and all that other stuff. So this is a more common problem than just Portland. But yeah, go ahead and describe this, because this says a lot.
Yep.
I mean, a lot of it is based on reading the tea leaves, mm-hmm. You know, looking for the fire in the hills before it hits Eugene. How you can get out of Portland is based on how much notice you have, and you're not going to be, there's so much traffic. And
there's so much traffic on a normal everywhere. Day, on a normal
yeah,
day.
On a yeah. normal day. There's bridges, two-lane bridges. I just don't see how some tragic event happens, the balloon goes up, you can't get out of the big city. You have to have other plans. I don't know, without being more specific.
It is.
But you really got to think about the bridges and the waterways and the traffic and how people react. I mean, we have a boil water notice and the entire city goes into meltdown and they're fighting each other and you can't find water anywhere. And that's just if you they give that's you a notice that you need to boil water
right.
for 3 days.
right.
I mean, Portland freaks out.
It's so crazy. So I'll say this. So for those of you in Portland or those of you outside of Portland, and again, Glenn makes a good point. A lot of cities are laid out this way. It's a city and it's cut in half up and down, and up and down north and south and east to west by two different rivers. And there are two bridges that go north. They go into north into Washington State, and that's it. It's mm-hmm. it's a big city and it has two bridges going north. That's it. On 5 o'clock on any day, you are going to be parked there. I call them the parking lot. There are two major highways going east and west. East of Portland, there's Highway 84. West of Portland, there's Highway 26. And that is it.
Yeah.
So if there's like you said, the balloon goes up, you need to assume those are immediately gridlocked, and you're crossing waterways. It's not like you can just, you know, get on your dirt bike. You've got to be able to cross some pretty major rivers. So you need to find those second and third, and even we've joked about
tertiary
logging roads.
One of my favorite words.
Yeah, yes. Those backwoods locations somehow. And you need to be able to cross water.
You got to be able to cross water.
Yeah. And we know that the likelihood, especially if there's some sort of interstate sort of something, the federal government can shut down those two bridges that go north and south. That's a
exactly.
crazy thing.
And advance notice is what it's all about. Mm-hmm. I personally have an account with Alerts USA. Highly recommend it. You get stuff. I mean, they give
you those advance notices
to CNN and the Secret Service, and I mean, they are way ahead of things. But there's that. Well, if I could change topics a bit, you talked about your wife and you didn't want her to go to work. I think I know the answer to this question, but is your wife on board?
You know what? I was reading your books, and she never really got on board.
Those books didn't do it? Doggone her?
No, my wife is on board.
Oh, okay.
Good. I'm sorry. I was talking about in the book. But yes, my wife is 100% on board, actually, except for there's a saying, come out of her, my people, and which means leave the big cities, leave where the population is. That's really the hardest part. Got food, got guns, got water, got all the secondary, third, I mean, a lot of things. I'm a beginner prepper, in my opinion. So there's probably a lot of things I'm saying mm-hmm. that people are, but
they need to hear.
I'm learning, and it's a beginning process, thanks to your books. But she's on board, and you know, she knows we're going to spend some money. Although I do go to Cash and Carry, and I do go to Costco, and you know, she sends me a list, and I'll be like, okay, I'm going to throw a bag of this in. You know,
classic move, my brother. Classic move.
And you know what? She's never going to notice the extra $20 on the Costco tab. You know, that's $300-$400.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things I just do on a week-to-week basis, and you know, she would be on board, but I just do it because it's kind of fun.
Well, in my opinion, the fact that she's on board the way you've described, and then you said, but you know, she still wants to live in a bigger city, I think is kind of what you're getting at.
Yeah,
I will take that. I know you will too, but I'm telling you, that's like 97% of it, because you have put together the means, because she hasn't hampered you, right?
Correct.
You've put together the means to get out, and you are attuned to the signs to look for, to have the advance notice. And by the way, if I haven't said this, I sure mean to. Knowing in advance that this is going to come, even having 24 more hours notice, and it's not like you get a memo that there's going to be a super secret thing. It means you're paying attention mm-hmm. and you're seeing things unfold. And here's the thing, you don't have normalcy bias and you're not afraid of, quote, overreacting. All those things are way more important than 25 AR-15s.
Yeah.
Way more important. So you've got it all together in my mind, because there is no perfect prepping situation. And anybody out there that's looking for that perfection is going to fail. Shelby and I don't have a perfect setup. We have a couple weaknesses in our setup, and we're striving and we're doing what we can, but there is no perfect setup, so don't expect that. So that is awesome that she's on board, because I can tell you it's not only impossible to do it without your wife, or if you're a woman who's a prepper and maybe your husband is a little reluctant, it's impossible to do without your spouse. And it's way more satisfying when your spouse is on board.
Yeah.
I mean, Shelby and I mean, every day is a blast.
Yeah.
You know, it's just an absolute blast, because we're so
it's something we do together. It's awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
And you think differently, and so you have different input. And, you know, if a guy's doing all the prepping, I mean, there's going to be things like, and, you know, my wife's like, well, what about all the feminine hygiene? You know, just what about this? What about that? It's like stuff like, well, how much do you need? Like, I wouldn't know how much to buy for whatever for a woman.
This topic.
Like, and I shouldn't know how
much. No, you shouldn't.
Don't
That's
be
okay.
a weirdo, Barry. Don't
I
be
know,
a weirdo.
I'm stopping right here. That's enough.
That's awesome.
Well, we have about a minute or so. If you could wrap up with some of the thoughts on, like, what's it like, you know, you get this thing, hey, Glenn and Shelby are going to be this gun store, and you're like, that's pretty close. I mean, do you think, I mean, how were we compared to what you thought?
I was fans of the books, and I read Shelby's book, and I was like, you know what, they're close, and even if it's uncomfortable or weird to meet somebody that you're a fan of and you've read their books, and I'm just going to do it and come see you guys and tell you thank you for how you affected my life and my family's life and my other family's life, and how, you know, if something does happen, you know, because of what came out of your heads and what you put on paper, like you've made it possible for us to manage through that, maybe. or give us a head start. So I at least wanted to come say thank you, but then we got to talking, and you two are very cool, down-to-earth people that have good senses of humor, and you have a lot of good things to say and on your podcasts, and you have exciting things to say and helpful things to say, and you know, we have a lot in common.
Yep.
And you guys are a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Well, thank you. I mean, can't top that.
No.
So let's just go ahead and leave on that note and see everybody at the next episode. Thank you very much, Barry.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a
good
one.
You've been listening to Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate. All of the fun and easy prepping information heard on this podcast can be found online at prepping2-0.com. You can also find out more about Glenn's books online at 299days.com and about Shelby's books online at agreatstate.com. Until next time, be smart, be safe, and be prepared.